Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Mecklenburg County Sheriff Gary McFadden defeated the previous sheriff in the last election largely due to a promise to end the department's voluntary use of the federal government's 287G program, which identifies undocumented inmates in county jails and then turns that information over to U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE. Sheriffs in other North Carolina urban counties were also elected on that promise. But that move triggered a response from ICE, a pledge to be more vigorous in looking for undocumented immigrants. They're following through on that pledge. And last month, ICE rounded up about 200 people around the state, including at least a dozen in Charlotte, in a series of raids. Most of those detained either had criminal convictions, pending charges, or deportation orders, but around 50 were not on ICE's radar. They were merely caught up in the dragnet. ICE says this makes our communities safer. But just this week, Mecklenburg County leaders gave their support to Sheriff McFadden and his comments condemning these recent raids. The sheriff says his priority is strengthening the social fabric of our community and making it safer. He says he's not about preventing ICE from doing their job, but is focused on building trust from within communities. And he sees these raids and the 287G program as counterproductive to that task. So this hour, we're going to hear about the impact of these raids on the immigrant community, but we start with a conversation with a representative from ICE. Sean Gallagher is the Field Office Director for U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement's Enforcement and Removal Operations Program. Thank you for coming onto the program this morning. I appreciate it.
Pleasure to be here, Mike.
Sean joins us by phone from Atlanta. First of all, I struggled yesterday as I wrote that to describe what it was that happened in the rounding up of these 200 people, to call it a raid, to call it a dragnet, to call it something else. What do you call it?
The term raid isn't even part of the ICE lexicon. To be honest with you, that's probably a term from the 70s back in the old INS days, more of a Hollywood term. but we conduct target enforcement operations, which means that we are looking for a specific person at a specific location based on intelligence and investigative work. So it's not indiscriminate rounding up, dragnet, looking for people that are illegally in this country. That's patently false.
Okay. When the Mecklenburg County Sheriff's Department ended its participation in 287G, someone from the Atlanta field office where you work suggested that ICE would have to step up its efforts in the community to find undocumented immigrants. Was that you who made that statement or somebody at another level?
Well, that was me.
Okay. Did that policy to step up efforts in Charlotte and in other places around North Carolina where sheriff's departments have left the 287G program, did that policy originate in Atlanta and with you, or did it come from higher up the chain?
The 287G agreements were signed many, many years ago prior to my arrival in Atlanta. And it's really not about the ending of 287G. It's really more about ending cooperation with ICE. As a result of these jurisdictions no longer are working with ICE, they are releasing those individuals that we believe pose a threat to public safety. They're releasing them back into the community without giving ICE the opportunity to take custody of those individuals. So it's more about cooperation with these jurisdictions, not the ending of 287G.
I'm going to paraphrase the sheriff here and say that he has said he's not, even though he no longer reports, he no longer asks about the immigration status of inmates and therefore cannot turn that information over to ICE because he doesn't know it. But that does not prevent, he said, ICE from asking the question themselves within the jails. Is that true?
Well, I can tell you that the sheriff's public-facing position on working with ICE is far different than reality. He has said publicly, after winning the campaign that he would cooperate with ICE, especially with respect to violent criminal aliens. That certainly not happened. He also stated that he would grant ICE, you know, the ability or to have access to the Mecklenburg County jail to identify or interview aliens. That's certainly not true either. And in fact, yesterday, my officers went to go interview some foreign-born individuals who committed crime within the county and denied my officers the ability to interview those individuals. And he's also said that he would honor ICE's criminal warrants. There's people that are in Mecklenburg's custody with criminal warrants, that he would turn those individuals over to ICE. And he's released, at least on one occasion, an individual with a federal warrant. So as far as cooperation with Mecklenburg County, there's no real cooperation that exists. He did, however, offer assistance if we were to make an arrest at the jail, at the Mecklenburg County Courthouse, to help us facilitate that arrest. But that's as far as cooperation goes.
So how many sheriffs or police departments around the country right now participate in 287G?
It's probably 70 or so, 70 plus, excuse me.
And what is the net benefit to ICE of that participation?
Sure. So, you know, 287G is a partnership between ICE and a sheriff's jurisdiction, whereby the sheriff has dedicated county assets or a state entity, it's just a state correctional facility, assets to help identify individuals within their custody that are potentially foreign-born. ICE trains these deputies or state correctional officers as designated immigration officers at the federal law enforcement training center in South Carolina. Once they receive and graduate from training, they become designated immigration officers. So while they're doing their regular duties as deputies within a facility, if they encounter an individual where there's indicia of foreign birth, they will interview that individual, see if they have legal immigration status, and if they don't, they can take an enforcement action way that my officers would do, because they're empowered as designated immigration officers.
I don't have exact figures here in terms of the number of people that you detained as a result of your operation late last month, but I saw it was 200 people around the state, and I think about a dozen in Charlotte. If it is a dozen in Charlotte, or if it's 10, or if it's 15, whatever the number is, how does that number compare to what you were achieving through the 287G program with the Sheriff's Department and the county jail?
I would say anecdotally, the 287G program would encounter somewhere around 1,200 aliens who are criminally charged annually. So arrest, you know, our operation, we arrested more than 200 across the state. We have those ongoing operations. That target enforcement occurs every single day in every state, across the country. That's nothing new. But Mecklenburg County, it was about 1,200 cases per year that they encountered, that they assisted.
So I guess what I'm getting at here is from your point of view, from ICE's point of view, are you actually getting more people than you did under 287G? Because you rounded up 200 people, a dozen or so here in the Charlotte area. Would that have been, and you were conducting, I think, these kinds of operations while 287G was underway in some of these communities. Are you netting more people, or are you getting less people? Are you actually finding people that you would not have found under 287G?
Sure. I guess the easiest way to explain it is to talk about an encounter that a sheriff's deputy under 287G would have in the county. Say it's one individual that was charged criminally. Once released from the county, I would send two officers over there to pick that individual up. When the county is finished with them, they would then go into ICE custody. But upon a release, it takes more assets to go out on the street to arrest that individual. You know, we have no choice but to conduct more at-large arrests in local neighborhoods and work sites, which will inevitably result in encountering others who are illegally within the community. Other individuals that would have never been on ICE radar, but, you know, as I kind of tried to explain during my press conference, it's the wrong place at the wrong time. They happen to be working with an individual that we have targeted for arrest. So, you know, if you look at that original case, that two officers would arrest one individual and place him in ICE custody, I have a team of officers searching for that individual who is now released, and chances are they're going to encounter others who would have normally not been encountered.
So, seven North Carolina mayors have signed a letter condemning ICE or the ICE raids in this state that led to the arrest of these 200 immigrants. They say that you have struck, and this is a rough quote from their letter, you've struck terror into the hearts of many valued community members. You've broken apart families, separated parents from children. I know this is just your job, but what is your reaction to that?
Well, I think a lot of the fear in the community is really put out there by misconceptions of what my officers do with respect to targeted enforcement. You have advocates and others who continually put out there the narrative that we conduct raids, that we, you know, put up roadblocks and checkpoints, that we patrol communities, conduct enforcement at schools and churches and hospitals, etc. That's not true, and I think that's important to know. We have an enforcement mission, you know, to arrest and remove those aliens that present a danger to public safety. And we will continue to do that. We do it in a targeted fashion. But, you know, when there's these misconceptions about what ICE really doesn't do, I think that spreads a lot of fear in the community. You know, we enforce a law that obviously is very controversial in some areas, and there are many on both sides of the spectrum. But, you know, my agency's responsibility is to enforce civil immigration laws that Congress has brought to fore in terms of law, and as an executive branch agency, my officer's job is to enforce the laws that Congress has enacted, and that's, you know, part of our mission, and that's a mission that we'll continue to do until the laws change.
You mentioned public safety, and that seems to be where the main disagreement is in all of this between law enforcement agencies. Our current sheriff believes that 287G makes the Charlotte region less safe. Our police chief, CMPD's Kirk Putney, has also said that it decreases public safety. They both agree that 287G makes those in the immigrant community less trustful of law enforcement, less likely to come forward to report a crime or to cooperate in a crime investigation because they're fearful. Now, I only have about 40 seconds left in this segment, but you obviously disagree with that.
No, I do. And you know, I just want to say that we don't want immigrants, both either legal or illegal, to fear law enforcement. And, you know, we do not, you know, want those individuals who are in our community to be fearful of reporting crime. You know, we have the 287G jurisdictions and other law enforcement entities that cooperate with ICE that do a really good job of outreach to build that trust within the communities. You know, they're not arrested.
Sean Gallagher, let me stop you there because we have to go to a break. I'll let you finish on the other side. Sean Gallagher is the field office director for ICE out of Atlanta. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about immigration and customs enforcement operations throughout North Carolina in recent months and rounding up undocumented immigrants with Sean Gallagher. He is the field office director of that organization and their enforcement and removal operations. In Atlanta, which conducts they have the branch office that oversees North and South Carolina as well. And we were talking just before the break about this obvious disagreement between local law enforcement's opinion of 287G and also these roundups versus the federal government law enforcement's opinion of this, and in terms of what it does exactly to and for public safety. And you were in the middle of a comment, Sean. I'll let you finish.
Yeah, thanks. So what I was trying to say is that, you know, we have jurisdictions that cooperate with ICE, both under 287G and those that honor our detainers. They conduct robust outreach to the immigrant communities to lay any fear, for fear of reporting crimes. And I know of no jurisdiction that arrests people for reporting crime. I think that when the community and law enforcement are not engaged, we miss an opportunity really to curtail the violence in the community. And that puts everybody's public safety.
But if you know, if you're in the immigrant community and you are not documented, and you call law enforcement because you fear for your own safety, or you're witnessing a crime, or you know about a crime that you know they're investigating, and under normal circumstances you might come forward, but you're afraid to come forward because if you call police, they're going to find out that you're undocumented and hand you over to ICE, or somehow you will be deported. Do you understand the fear there?
I certainly understand the fear, but I think the reality is that there is no law enforcement jurisdiction that's turning over anybody to ICE for reporting crime or being a victim of crime. And I think that ICE and law enforcement and the immigrant advocate community should be able to stand shoulder to shoulder to encourage immigrants to report crime without fear of deportation. You know, our focus is on criminal offenders, you know, which there are many in the area. And the failure to report crime, or bearing witness to it, is not unique in the foreign-born community. As the sheriff has said, he has a difficult time to have U.S. citizens come forward as witnesses. You know, people fear retaliation or retribution when reporting crime. Again, that's not unique to the foreign-born community. But that's why I think that robust outreach, we can allay those fears. We want, immigrants, whether legal or illegal, to report crimes, because often it's the people that ICE is looking for are victimizing those same communities.
So let me ask you a couple nuts and bolts questions here. How do you choose the areas in which to conduct checkpoints or in which to, that you'll think you'll be able to apprehend people who are not here legally?
We don't do checkpoints. We don't patrol the community looking for people that perhaps are illegally in this country. We do target enforcement. When my officers leave the office every day, they have a target portfolio, which includes all their intelligence and et cetera. They know where they're going and who they're going to arrest. Let me just illustrate this. There are many places across this country, and I'm sure in Charlotte, and I know where they are, places are in Atlanta, but there are places where those who are illegally in this country or seeking employment go to perhaps get picked up for day labor jobs. If my intention was to indiscriminately arrest people because I believed that they were illegally in this country, those places wouldn't exist. We are concentrated on trying to arrest those who've been criminally convicted or criminally charged. And I think our statistics really show that we do targeted enforcement. 91% of the 15,000 people that we arrested last year were either criminally convicted or criminally charged.
And those crimes were what kinds of crimes? Because it's a crime to be here illegally. It could be argued and has been argued that people who are here undocumented have already broken the law and therefore are criminals. So when you say they are criminals, what are they? What crimes have they committed?
Okay, so you're right. It is a crime to illegally enter the United States, but that's not what I'm talking about.
Okay.
What I'm talking about is, you know, you've come into this country illegally and that you've committed some type of crime while within the interior of the United States. It can be an array of crimes, things that are low level to the highest crimes, murder. The fact of the matter is,
Is local law enforcement looking for these people? Have they broken the law? As whether they're citizens or not, they've broken the law. Are allegedly, is local law enforcement looking for these people?
I imagine if they have local warrants, but you know, if we go back to
I'm just trying to get a handle on what kind of crimes these may be. Is it breaking and entering? Is it car theft? Is it you mentioned murder? I believe.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll give you an example. You know, I think Sheriff McFadden said recently that for me to suggest that dangerous people are suddenly walking out of jail because of the termination of our agreement, that I'm engaging in cynical fear mongering, I think is what he said. But, you know, I would challenge the sheriff to provide the people of this county with a list of the types of crimes of people that have been released that ICE have interested in. And I'll give you an example of a few. We had a detainer on an individual that was in Mecklenburg County for breaking and entering of a motor vehicle on larceny. Our detainer was ignored. That individual was released and a week later was arrested in Charlotte for armed robbery and assault with a dangerous weapon. Mm-hmm. They released a gentleman carrying a concealed gun, discharging a firearm in the city, malicious use of explosives.
So the reason I'm getting at this is because two of the crimes you just cited seem to be local law enforcement problems and not federal crimes. They're not federal. Under normal circumstances, if I commit those crimes, would the federal government come looking for me?
No, absolutely not. But again, you know, ICE is focused on enforcing its mission, which is to, as I said previously, identify and arrest and remove aliens from this country who present a danger to national security and public safety, but also those who undermine our legal immigration system or thwart our border control efforts. You know, those people are being removed from this country because they're here in violation of law. But we focus our efforts on those who committed crimes or who continue to commit crimes within our communities. You know, 100% of the crimes committed by illegal aliens in this country is 100% preventable.
Okay.
Excuse me. Because if those folks weren't living illegally and committing crimes in this community, if they weren't allowed in this country, then they wouldn't have the opportunity to offend in this country.
So I'm going to ask you a question you may not know the answer to. Once you arrest, you apprehend these people, and I think what was the figure you said nationwide, 15,000, something like that?
No, that wasn't nationwide. That's within my region. Within my field office last year, over 15,000.
So once you may not know the answer to this. So when you arrest them and they are, how did most of them get here? Did they come through ports of entry? Did they fly in on an airplane and overstay their visa? Or did they come using a mule through unguarded parts of our southern border? How did they get, most of them get here?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be able, I don't have those types of statistics.
But wouldn't that be important information to know to guide us in our decision about whether or not to build this wall?
Yeah, I mean, again, anecdotally, I can tell you that a large number of those individuals are not visa overstays. These are individuals that have snuck across the border. So
how do you compare to what's going on right now this year to what went on in previous administrations? Because this has been a highly politicized situation, and it's connected, obviously, to President Trump's stance on the border. But were you doing as many of these operations prior to President Trump coming into office as you are now?
Yes. And so, just the same. I mean, you know, I've done immigration enforcement across a number of administrations. You know, ICE is focused on continuing to do its mission. The only thing that changes when a new administration comes in could be your enforcement priorities. You know, there's a slight difference in the enforcement priorities under the prior administration and under the current. You know, we were always focused on trying to arrest criminal aliens in this country illegally. As I would say, under the last administration, there were a number of carve-outs that prevented ICE officers from arresting certain types of criminals unless they had a different threshold. This administration has simply said, enforce the law as it's written, and that we should focus our efforts on those who have been convicted of a crime, charged with a crime, or committed acts that constitute a crime, those engaged in fraud before the government, abuse public benefits, and those people that have been ordered removed from the country, and that's what we've done. We've had a slight increase in the number of administrative arrests, but it's nothing significant.
We have a question from several listeners who reached us on Facebook and email. I'm going to combine the questions because you mentioned that a lot of these apprehensions take place where you know people go for day labor jobs.
No, that's a misquote. I said that's not where they occur.
That's not where they occur.
That is an illustration that we don't just do random immigration enforcement against people that we believe are illegal, that these places still exist. You probably won't see any. I know of zero arrests that have occurred at any of these places since I've been here.
Okay, but that aside, people have to eat, and they have to pay rent,
sure.
And they have to have transportation, so they have to get a job. Mm-hmm. So as you're rounding up these people, is anybody holding accountable the people who hire them because they're undocumented?
I think that's not part of my part of ICE. That's Homeland Security Investigations. Is the ICE component that deals with illegal employers, like you saw up in North Carolina, around the same time that we were doing our operation. They do worksite enforcement. That's the ICE entity that's responsible for addressing those who employ people illegally.
If we fixed our immigration system with people on both sides of the aisle say is terribly broken, if we fixed it, would you be out of a job?
I don't think I'd be out of the job because I think we're always going to have people that have the privilege of coming into this country that are going to commit crime. So I don't think I'll ever be out of a job.
Sean Gallagher is the field office director of the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement and Removal Operations Division. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us. I appreciate it.
I appreciate the time. Thanks, Mike.
You're welcome. We're going to continue our discussion about U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement and the impact of their decision to more strongly enforce immigration laws by sending more officers onto the streets and to search for and round up those who may be here illegally. Teo Armas follows this unfolding story for the Charlotte Observer. He is with us in our Spirit Square studio, along with Jose Hernandez Perez, the executive director of the Latin American Coalition. Welcome to you both. Good morning.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Good morning.
Nice to have you back. Teo, you've been reporting on this with the arrest of these 200 people from around the state by ICE last month. Was it a surprise to the immigrant community here, or were they waiting for this to happen? Because it happens all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an interesting question. I'll point out, first off, also, I got these updated statistics yesterday, actually, but for that whole week, February 4th through February 11th, it was 275 people in total across the state of North Carolina. And I think it's interesting. ICE has certainly said multiple times that, while there were all these campaigns by sheriffs who said that they were going to get rid of the 287G program, they said, we're going to have to step up our enforcement. They've been very clear, that they were issuing that statement all over the course of last year. But I think a lot of people in the immigrant community, and I think Jose can maybe speak to this later, have said that this is not really all that new, in the way that ICE is trying to.
Well, I was going to ask, 275 is a lot of people, but if they're doing this on an ongoing basis, why did this incident get so much press?
I think for two reasons. Number one, I think, this was more widespread than sort of similar incidents that have occurred in the past. I was looking at our archives on this yesterday, and, for instance, in one week during February 2017, 84 people were arrested statewide. And that's a significant difference. And I think the other thing is just the political rhetoric around all of this. ICE is really trying to frame this targeted enforcement operation, this raid, whatever you want to call it, as retaliation for Mecklenburg County, Wake County, getting rid of their 287G programs, other counties not honoring ICE detainers. And And I think it's sort of a combination of the scale and, you know, the rhetoric around all of it. That
so these arrests, Jose, were the, as Teo just said, were the promised reaction by ICE to a decision by our sheriff and other sheriffs around the state to not participate in 287G. Would the community that you are here to represent prefer 287G, where people in jail, guilty or not, are asked about their status, and if they're not here with papers, essentially, they are taken into custody by ICE? Or would you prefer this new normal, as ICE calls it, of seeking people out and arresting them?
I don't prefer either one.
Not in a hard place.
Yeah. No, we don't prefer either one of them. I think their narrative, first of all, just want to point out that to me as an American, it's unbelievable that we have a law enforcement agency that is publicly denouncing a democratically elected sheriff and telling a community that you're going to be punished for electing someone who they chose.
But the argument could be made that these sheriffs who have decided not to cooperate are breaking federal law.
No, but the reality is that he's not. The reality is that he was elected publicly. He's following every rule that he has to apply in order to comply with the law enforcement job that he was elected to enforce, and the reality is that this is have 287G or no 287G. This has been happening. If you look back in Charlotte, as Teo was mentioning, we have had this type of detentions, massive detentions in North Carolina in the past, and we had 287G. So what has changed? You know, it's just a narrative that they are putting out there. And it's a narrative that is unbelievable, like I was saying, to tell a community that we're going to punish you just because we have elected to be a community that is open to immigrants and that we don't believe in the type of enforcement that they're carrying out.
So how was this roundup or how were these arrests, these detentions, I'm not sure what the proper word is here. How were they carried out? I think, Teo, in writing about these arrests, you mentioned that some of the customs enforcement officers were undercover. I'm not sure what that means. Was that the case just for this roundup, or do we have agents operating undercover in the community? Think about that, because we're going to a break, and I can't let you answer it. We'll come back and get an answer to that question. Teo Armas is with us. He's a reporter for the Charlotte Observer, and Jose Hernandez Paris is the executive director of the Latin American Coalition. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the impact of ICE's upscaling of their activities in the absence of 287G here and in other areas around the state. Teo Armas is a reporter for The Observer. Jose Hernandez Paris is executive director of the Latin American Coalition. So just prior to the break, I was quoting something from one of your stories, Teo, about some of these customs enforcement officers being undercover. Were they undercover just for this most recent operation, or do we have people, do you know, operating undercover in the community all the time?
So I think that's an interesting question and something that's very contested depending on who you ask. We asked ICE about this at this press conference that they did here in Charlotte recently. They said ICE officers carry identification, some sort of badge on them wherever they go. But in a lot of instances, and, you know, activists have gone out and filmed these incidents, ICE officers will be wearing a vest that says police, you know, and a lot of people in the community get very confused by that and think that they're interacting with CMPD. There was one incident on video in Henderson County, I believe, where activists allege that ICE was actually dressing up as a day laborer. I know that's something that we were discussing earlier, had a van that a day laborer would be driving and, sort of in a type of situation where they weren't very clearly identified as immigration enforcement.
And I read, and I think it was one of your articles, that in one of these raids, some of these officers were wearing jackets that said police on them, making you think perhaps that they were with CMPD or some other municipal police department. In fact, they are not. Is that being dishonest? Because they essentially are police. They're just federal police.
So I think, again, that depends on who you ask. You know, I actually asked about that at, this press conference that Sean Gallagher did with Brian Cox, who's the spokesperson that, oversees ICE throughout the South. And I believe it was Brian who basically said, police is sort of a more recognizable law enforcement term compared to something like ICE, you know, I think.
But that causes people to be distrustful of the police in general, I guess, is the argument that is being made in the community. I know this is causing a lot of anxiety in the immigrant community. We know that CMS Superintendent Clayton Wilcox has referenced the anxiety it's causing school children because they don't know what may happen to their parents or to themselves, for that matter, because of these raids, particularly when they get so much publicity. Local law enforcement says it would rather build bridges to the community for public safety rather than strike fear into their hearts. So, Jose, how should we be handling this? There are people here without documentation. They came here not through channels. You are an immigrant from Colombia. You've been here for 40 years. I'm guessing that you came here through channels.
Yes, yes.
So how do you personally feel about people who take shortcuts to get here, and how should we be handling this, in your opinion?
I'll tell you exactly how we should be handling this, because we have in the past. As you know, Mike, I used to be the director of the International House here in Charlotte. At one time, there was an investigation. Well, Charlotte was different a little bit. We have changed as a community, unfortunately, in some negative ways, I think. And I think a lot of it has to do with that the national rhetoric against immigrants is affecting our community and is creating divisiveness. Okay. But I'll tell you what happened at one time. There was an investigation of some gang members that were local. And when they got ready to do this arrest, law enforcement agencies have to collaborate with each other. That just makes sense, right? We have over 10 different law enforcement agencies in Charlotte, if you count all the different agencies, federal, local, state, and all of that. So when I was in International House, they called all the nonprofit agency directors of communities that were about to be affected and said, tomorrow morning at 8:30 a.m., you need to be at the district attorney's office because something's going to happen, but we want you to be informed. We want you to be aware, and we want the community to understand what's happening. We went there. And we were all told, at this moment, what's happening, we're detaining these following individuals. This is a collaboration between different agencies. The representatives of different agencies were there. And we were informed about what's happening. And we talked with them, and they clarify the process that they were going through and the individuals that we're targeting. When we came out of that meeting, we knew exactly who they're targeting. We were able to talk to our communities, and we were able to appease any fear that was happening.
When did that change, that approach?
I think when leadership changes, people have different. I think the lens in which we view the world.
Local leadership or national leadership?
Both. Okay. Both. I think you know.
But what you're saying is that this would be better for the community. It would go down better in the community if leaders in the community were in the loop.
Well, the narrative is that we're protecting criminals, and they're changing the narrative. At first, they're changing what a criminal is. You know, someone for reentry now is a criminal. And let me remind folk, we have short memory in America sometimes. For a long time, the policy was that individuals could come back and forth across the border, and they would come and work, and we were benefiting from that work, right? These individuals, many of them from rural areas, just trying to take care of their families. Many of them didn't know how to read or write. They just basically, or in English, and basically were given a document, and they would sign the document, they would get a slap on their hand, and they would continue, they would come to our farms. North Carolina is one of the main destinations, and they would work and get paid honorably for a day's work, right? Go back and take care of their families. So now what they did is changed. How do you change the narrative of what a criminal is? Now you make that a felony. If you came back, let's say this individual, this is 20 years ago, and they happened to come back and forth one time, and because that was the unspoken rule, right? We're benefiting from these workers. Everybody looked the other way. We didn't provide any workman's compensation, any insurance, any rights to that they have. If they got injured, they would just send them back. So we were benefiting. The agriculture industry was benefiting. Everyone was benefiting. We have, you know, we could afford potatoes, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And now you criminalize that, and now you call that a criminal.
So let me flip the tables. Let me play devil's advocate with you. You're from Colombia.
Yes, sir.
And you've been here for 40 years, so you may not know the answer to this question because I'm not sure how closely you keep up with how Colombia operates. And then we're not talking about Colombia, South Carolina.
Yes, sir.
We're talking about the country.
Have a stronger southern accent.
Yeah. If I, as a U.S. citizen, went to Colombia and went into your country, your former country,
yes,
without documentation, or I overstayed my visa because I was there on a tourist visa and I decided, this is pretty cool, I'm staying. What would be their reaction if I were discovered? Would I be arrested and deported? What would happen to me?
I'm so glad you asked that question. Because if you look up in the news, Colombia has given over 1 million Venezuelans the right to work and the right to take care of their families in Colombia. Today and tomorrow, there's a concert that is being sponsored in the border between Colombia and Venezuela to gather over $100 million of aid, humanitarian aid to Venezuelans. And it's being driven by the Venezuelan community in Colombia. They're the volunteers, over 100,000 volunteers, over 600,000 volunteers on the other side of the border. We have treated Venezuelan immigrants with dignity and with respect. We have given them the opportunity for them to take care of their families. And not only that, we have addressed the issues that are happening in Venezuela with the United States, with a foreign policy that is geared to addressing the issues so that Venezuelans don't have to leave their country, which is what we have to do here.
But
you know how Sean will be out of a job?
Yeah, but you're talking.
Sean will be out of a job if we change our foreign policy to address the needs of these countries where people are coming from, not creating borders.
But you're talking about a situation that is volatile right now with Venezuela. Suppose Venezuela was what it was 15, 20 years ago, would the attitude be the same? Would the attitude be the same about an immigrant coming into Colombia from Brazil, from Paraguay, from the United States? Would it be the same? What would happen to a person if they were found to be there without documentation?
It's actually worse. You know what it's like to have 700,000 people come across your border in less than 2 years? You know what that can do to a community? You know what kind of a stigma that can create? We are complaining because we have 2,000 individuals on our border, and we are afraid of them. So I'll stop with that.
If I can just jump in here, actually, because right before coming to Charlotte, I was actually reporting on the border, and I think it's to sort of tie this all back
in
to
Texas.
The United States. Yeah. In Texas, yes, in McAllen, Texas. You know, a lot of the people that I think are – I can't speak to, you know, decades and decades and decades of immigration, but a lot of the people that are coming over the border now are coming from the Northern Triangle of Central America, which I think a lot of people would say is – you know, probably one of the most violent places in the Western Hemisphere, suffering from a lot of gang violence, a lot of government corruption, issues with domestic violence there, and seeking asylum in the United States, mm-hmm. which I will point out is entirely legal and sort of protected under international law. And again, I can't speak to, you know, the entire population of people who are living in Charlotte right now, but there's certainly a sizable Central American community here.
Since you were in Texas, we hear a lot about El Paso because of Beto O'Rourke and the attention that he and the president, by his recent visit there, have brought to El Paso. And El Paso, the mayor of El Paso, has said that they are one of the safest communities in America, and people go back and forth across the border like we go back and forth to North and South Carolina, evidently. Mm-hmm. Is that true? How do most Texans who live along this border feel about immigrants and immigration and about their own safety?
That's a really great question. I think, I mean, the Rio Grande Valley, which is where I was, is an overwhelmingly Democratic area, if that sort of
Democratic Party?
Yes, yeah. Okay. An overwhelmingly blue area. It's sort of, you know, considered one of the bluest parts of Texas. And, you know, there are people who live on one side of the border and study on the other side of the border who, you know, live in Texas and work in Mexico or vice versa. I think it's very, very common to just cross the border as part of your daily routine. Mm-hmm. You know, I did go to a Ted Cruz rally while I was there, actually, to go report on it. And there certainly is a sizable population of people there who, you know, are in favor of building a wall. But I would say the overwhelming majority of people I spoke to there, you know, don't want a wall and think it would be a waste of money. And there, I mean, there's a lot of issues now where, you know, the wall would cut through a butterfly preserve and, you know, wall off a historic chapel and all these things that are sort of, you know, would be between the wall and right. the actual river.
So this is a highly political issue in this country, and I don't know, not necessarily know that it has to be, because we could actually go to work on fixing the immigration system, which we don't seem to want to do, but it's political right now. And you mentioned that in that part of Texas there are a lot of Democrats, and Democrats are generally considered to be more open to the idea of people being here without documentation than Republicans seem to be. Recently, the entire Mecklenburg County Commission issued a statement of support for Gary McFadden, Sherry McFadden's decision against 287G. Of course, the County Commission is made up entirely of Democrats. Mm-hmm. How unusual is it for a political body to endorse the activities of a local law enforcement agency that is at odds with the federal government?
I'm not sure I can, you know, answer that question within the context of North Carolina or, you know, even nationally, but this certainly isn't the first time I've heard of local municipalities getting involved in federal immigration enforcement. You know, TPS, which is sort of another hot issue, it's this temporary protected status for people who came here during natural disasters. There's been, like, county councils in Massachusetts that have, you know, sent statements right off to Congress.
So we only have a few minutes left, Jose, and I'm interested in just what the impact of this is having on the community. And you have said that we need immigration reform because you, meaning us, need someone to cut your grass, fix your cars, clean your houses. That's true. That's what these people do, many of them. And that's how many Americans, native-born Americans, have been employing these people. Why then do you think we're so averse to them? Are they taking, in people's minds, jobs that other Americans could have if only these people weren't here taking them? Or are they doing the things that Americans don't want to do? And if that's true, are you helping to facilitate setting up an underclass?
Yeah, why are we so averse? I think things have changed politically, and in the public discourse has changed to one of fear. Reason is no longer a way of having an argument. If you look at statistics about crime, if you look at statistics about labor, if you look at statistics about economy,
and the number of people crossing
and the numbers of people, how do they cross, and why do you build a wall? Is it practical? Where there is the reason is no longer reason, and we're being driven by fear, and we have to fight against that. And that's our job. Our job is to clarify the narrative. Our job is to help Americans understand that you should be really extremely worried about an agency who is judge and jury, an agency that out of 3,000 counties, only 76 have chosen to work with them.
Are they judge and jury? Don't they? If they apprehend somebody, don't they have to go through immigration court before they're deported?
They can actually let someone go if they feel that the mm-hmm. person is not a person of interest, and they're not choosing to do that. So we should be worried that law enforcement, when the law enforcement agency does not want to collaborate with another law enforcement agency, what does that tell you? When local government agencies are making a statement as strong as they can under their political restrictions, that they support a community. What does that tell us? And it tells us that we can't be driven by fear anymore. And I've been in Charlotte, like you said, 40-something years. We are a community with one of the fastest-growing cities in the United States. We're a thriving community. We're a thriving economy. The profile of Charlotte that you see has been built by immigrants. Charlotte has been built by immigrants themselves. By slavery has been built by communities working together. We value hard work. We value family, and they have been contributing members to our community. And anyone that knows anyone that's an immigrant in Charlotte, which is about 20-something% of our community, knows that we're good people.
I have 30 seconds. Where do you see this heading?
Oh, unfortunately. Heading in the same direction it has been heading the last 20 years.
You see
everyone,
no change.
Everyone pushing it to the next guy. Everyone pushing it to the next elected official. And that has to stop.
Jose Hernandez-Perez is executive director of the Latin American Coalition. Teo Armas, a recent arrival in Charlotte, but he's been here long enough to be covering this, and he covered this in Texas as well, in the southern part of Texas, around what, Austin? Is that where it's, that's the central part of Texas, isn't it?
Austin is central, but I was also in McAllen on the border.
Thank you both for joining us. Appreciate it. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.